In March of 2022, our family was forced to evacuate from Ukraine. We have served as missionaries in Lviv for over 20 years, and now, like so many others, we find ourselves suddenly displaced from our home, our church, and our precious Ukrainian friends. But despite the shock of evacuation, God is opening doors and leading us step by step down this new path. Our purpose is to bless and minister to Ukrainians affected by the war. Come with us as we share our stories, striving to serve God, bless people, and praying that someday soon, this journey will lead us back to our beloved Ukraine. Well, hello, everybody. Joshua here. Welcome back to the Journey to Ukraine podcast. Today, we have another live chat with our friend and teammate, Serhii Chapota. Many of you may remember him from previous episodes. Serhii has worked with us for many years, sometimes on staff with our team, other times just collaborating on different ministry projects. Serhii was called up to serve in the Ukrainian Armed Forces back in the spring, and he has been on active duty since that time. So, Serhii, welcome to the show.
Hello.
So today, as you may have noticed, Kelsey's not with us. She's got plenty of things on her plate, and said he and I are going to handle this interview just between the two of us. So here's the format. I'm going to ask various questions to said he in English, and said he actually understands quite a bit of English. He'll know what I'm talking about, and then he will give his answers in Ukrainian, and I will translate him sentence by sentence so that you'll, just for those of you who may not yet fully understand the Ukrainian language, we don't want you to get left behind. So, all right, without further ado, Serhii, let's get started. So first of all, tell us where you are serving and what are your general duties?
Останні 5.5 місяців я служу біля Одеси.
So for the past 5.5 months, I've been serving near Odessa.
Це повітряні сили і полк зв'язку.
So this is my service is connected with the Air Force and specifically the communications like part or department.
Загальні обов'язки кожен третій день я заступаю на пост і проводжу частину доби на посту зі зброєю.
So my duties are like every third day he has guard duty, so he is armed and he's standing on guard duty.
Я охороняю об'єкт, який мені доручили.
And he guards a particular object, not object, but like a particular point of value, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to just add one thing before we go further in the interview, just to give everybody the context. Serhii and I are doing this interview over Zoom, and right now his connection is just through his mobile phone. He's sitting in a room in the dark because they don't have any power down there in Odessa. And this is very common, as we've talked about previously, across many parts of Ukraine. So we'll hope that the mobile phone connection holds up as we do this interview. I'm looking at Serhii with his phone flashlight in the dark. All right.
Так, я зараз дійсно в темряві, і в Одесі світло то включають, то виключають, і дуже важко зрозуміти, коли буде світло, коли не буде, тому це завжди такий сюрприз. Оп, є світло, через кілька годин, оп, нема світла.
Right, so he was saying that he's in Odessa, and this is just a common thing. Sometimes you don't even know, like the electricity and the lights will come on, and then they'll be on for a while, and then oh, they'll go off, and it's quite unpredictable. All right, so Serhii, let's go on to the next question. I'd like to hear about your wife, Natalia, and the kids in Germany. We know that they've been there for some months and you've not been able to see them. Do you think they will be able to return to Ukraine soon?
Ну, технічно, звичайно, вони можуть повернутися будь-коли, коли захочуть.
So technically, he was saying, of course, they have the right to return to Ukraine anytime they want to.
Питання в тому, коли це робити мудро.
The question is just like when would it be the wisest time to do that?
І оскільки зараз Росія здійснює атаки на електростанції, то мудріше принаймні кілька місяців перечекати і дочекатися тепла, світла, весни.
So when we take into account the fact that Russia has continued to actively target electrical stations in different parts of Ukraine's energy infrastructure, we think it's probably wiser to wait until the spring when we have light and warmth and just a better time.
Тому, можливо, ми просто почекаємо, коли буде березень-квітень, і тоді вже разом вирішимо, чи вони повертаються, чи ще кілька місяців вони поживуть в Німеччині.
So I think we'll probably wait at least until March or April, and then we will decide together whether Natalia and the kids will return to Ukraine or maybe wait a few more months in Germany. We'll see. Okay, so let's talk about the war itself a little bit. Now, there are those who kind of see this conflict as sort of a spat between Putin and Zelensky, so just two governments kind of quarreling over politics. Tell us what your perspective is on this.
Так, дуже важливо розуміти, що це жодною мірою не конфлікт між двома людьми, Путіним і Зеленським.
So it's important to understand that in no way can this conflict be construed as just a conflict between two people, between Putin and Zelensky.
Насправді, Зеленський опинився в цій історії лише тому випадковим чином.
In reality, Zelensky ended up in this part of history or the story kind of by chance.
Це міг бути будь-який інший керівник, який намагався би виконувати свої звичайні обов'язки як президент України.
It could have been any other government leader that was trying to just fulfill his role as the head of state.
Конфлікт між Україною і Росією триває понад 300 років.
The conflict between Russia and Ukraine has actually been going on for over 300 years.
Якщо коротко пояснити, в чому справа, то справа в тому, що Росія вважає, що такі держави, як Україна, Білорусь та деякі інші, повинні бути або частиною її Росії, або бути залежні від неї і бути її сателітами.
So the problem is that Russia considers that Ukraine and Belarus and a few other countries should either be part of Russia itself, or if they are independent, they should sort of only exist as vassal states in the, as we often say, in the sphere of influence of Russia.
Так, і ми мали кілька досвідів боротьби проти Росії за свою незалежність, і доволі часто ми програвали цю боротьбу.
So we've already had some experience with armed conflict with Russia, even in the recent years of our independence. And historically, we have not done well in those conflicts. We've pretty much lost.
Україна важлива для Росії з багатьох точок зору.
Ukraine is important for Russia for a lot of reasons.
Є географічні моменти, є корисні копалини, велика територія, багато людей і так далі.
Корисні копалини –
це як вугілля чи залізо, чи щось.
Okay, so he's saying that some of the reasons that Ukraine is of interest or important to Russia, some of them are geographic, others of them have to do with resources and so on.
Але головний чинник – це сприйняття росіянами українців як молодших братів, як тих, хто мають бути біля них, при них, завжди в союзі, завжди в партнерстві. So, ніколи окремо, ніколи незалежно і так далі.
So perhaps the main problem here is the tendency of Russia or Russians to view Ukrainians as like the younger brothers, the little Russians. They should always be on the side of Russia, be their partners. They should always be, you know, they should always be carrying out whatever the will of Russia is and not be independent as their own nation.
І якщо хтось думає, що Росія забере собі якусь частину України, Крим, Донбас чи щось інше, і просто зупиниться, це ніколи не зупиниться, тому що незалежна Україна, навіть вдвічі менша чи втричі менша, це проблема для будь-якої Росії.
And so, if someone thinks that Russia wants to just take a part of Ukraine's territory and stop there, so for example, maybe take Crimea or take the Donbas or whatever and then stop, this will never happen because any Ukrainian state, no matter how large, even if it's a greatly reduced size-wise Ukrainian state, this is unacceptable and intolerable for Russia.
І на завершення, відповідаючи на це питання, важливо розуміти, що справа не лише в одному Путіні, а в дуже багатьох росіянах, простих звичайних росіянах, чи генералах, чи депутатах. Всі вони часто заражені шовінізмом і імперіалізмом. Тобто вони дійсно вірять, що Україна мусить бути біля Росії, і інакше бути не може.
So it's also, as I close, it's also important to stress that this problem does not stem from a single man. This is not just Putin. There are many, many, you might say, everyday Russians or generals, other Russian leaders who also, they kind of live in this parallel reality, and they have this idea that Ukraine has to be theirs, that Ukrainians should be subservient, and that there should be no independent Ukraine. Okay, so we touched on this a little bit, but tell me about Putin's goals here. What do you think his real goals are, and what is motivating his actions in Ukraine?
Українці часто жартують, що в Путіна немає стратегії, в нього є тільки тактика.
Ukrainians often joke that Putin doesn't have any strategy, he just has tactics.
В цьому є доля правди.
And there's a bit of truth in that.
Я би сказав, що така глобальна велика ціль Путіна – зробити Україну якомога слабшою, якомога слухнянішою, такою, яка не може йти своїм шляхом.
I would say that in general, one of Putin's main goals here is to make Ukraine as weak as possible, so as to prevent it from being able to walk its own path, you know, to be independent.
Я думаю, що його цілі 24 лютого – це було захопити принаймні половину або більшу частину території, а можливо і всю Україну.
I think if we want to talk
встановити...
I think if we want to talk about his goals on the 24th of February when the invasion began, at that point I believe he intended to capture at least half of Ukraine, perhaps even more.
І поставити сюди владу, можливо, це були б навіть етнічні українці, які б були дуже проросійські і в усьому підтримували політику Путіна.
And he wanted to install a regime, maybe even a regime made up of ethnic Ukrainians, but of ones who are very pro-Russian, people who would support his regime and his goals going forward.
Mm-hmm. Але перший місяць війни показав, що Україна значно сильніша, ніж про це думали росіяни і, зокрема, Путін.
But the first months of the war showed that Ukraine is much stronger than Putin had realized or even typical Russians understood.
Україна виявилася сильнішою, ніж навіть думали західні партнери України.
Ukraine, in fact, turned out to be stronger than even her Western partners had realized.
Зараз для Путіна важливо показати своїй аудиторії, своїм росіянам, що він все ж таки сильний лідер і що є якісь перемоги.
So right now it's very important for Putin to demonstrate to his domestic audience that he is still a strong leader and that that they will still achieve victory.
Наприклад, якщо б він міг закріпити перемогу на Донбасі, це вже би був якийсь плюс для нього.
So for example, if he could achieve some kind of victory in the Donbas region, that would be a big plus for him.
Тобто для нього важливі не так справжні перемоги, як показати своїй аудиторії, що він є сильний лідер, він перемагає, і він не йде назад, він не відступає, він не може програти ніколи.
Right, so it's for him, it's probably first and foremost important for him to be able to demonstrate to his domestic audience, not necessarily some kind of a real authentic victory as we might define it objectively, but at least something that will pass for a victory, something that will demonstrate that he is still strong, that he's in charge, and something that will not appear as a retreat.
І ти запитував, що мотивує його дії. Я думаю, що глобально він є ображений і на Україну, і на великі західні країни, як Сполучені Штати чи Європейський Союз.
And so you had asked, like, what do you think is motivating his actions? And I think in a major way, he is offended at just Ukraine and at the West and the world in general.
Путін пам'ятає часи, коли Російська імперія була велика, сильна, багата, і він хоче повернутися до цих часів.
Putin remembers a time when the Russian Empire was great and rich and very powerful, and he wants to return to those times.
І він хоче мати відчуття, що Москва є другим містом у світі після Вашингтона.
He wants to return to such a status where Moscow is like the, I don't know, the second power in the world and up next to Washington.
Тобто Росія велика могутня країна, з нею рахуються Сполучені Штати, з нею рахується Китай, вона важлива, вона впливає,
so
вона
Russia,
воює і так далі.
So Russia is a great nation and she is able to reckon with or to have influence with such great other powers like the United States or China, different ones.
Ось так.
So and that's said his thoughts on what is motivating Putin. All right, so let's go on to another question here. A lot of people are concerned about nuclear weapons, and of course there's been much talk about whether or not Putin will use nukes in Ukraine or possibly elsewhere. So said he, what are your thoughts? Do you think Putin will use nuclear weapons in Ukraine or some other place?
Це дуже цікаве питання. Я пам'ятаю, як ти запитав мене в 2014 році, чи готовий Путін почати велику війну в Україні.
I remember when you had asked me back in 2014 if I thought that Putin was ready to start a full-scale war in Ukraine.
І я пам'ятаю, що я відповів тобі, що ніхто не знає, що в голові Путіна, тому неможливо сказати, буде він починати велику війну чи не буде.
And I remember I told you back then that nobody knows what's in Putin's head, and so it's impossible to say whether he will start a major war or not.
Так само тут, важко сказати точно.
And the same here, it's very difficult to say with any certainty.
З одного боку, він може застосувати тактичну ядерну зброю, яка не матиме таких глобальних планетарних наслідків.
So on the one hand, he could use what's called a tactical nuclear weapon, which wouldn't have such a global or a far-reaching effect across the planet.
Тому що Росія має кілька видів ядерної зброї. Один з видів – це великі ракети дальнього радіусу дії, які можуть прилетіти навіть в Америку.
So Russia, of course, has many different kinds of nuclear weapons. One kind that they have is like what's often called a strategic nuke. And these are intercontinental ballistic missiles that have a very long range, long enough even to hit the United States.
Але з іншого боку, як тільки російські ракети полетять в Америку, американські ракети зразу полетять в Росію.
But of course, as soon as any Russian rockets would be launched towards America, American rockets would immediately start heading towards Russia.
І Путін не хоче померти в цьому всьому.
And Putin doesn't want to die in all of that.
Я думаю, він використовує ядерну зброю, тактичну чи стратегічну, просто як останню карту. Він шантажує світ. В першу чергу шантажує Європу і Америку. Він нагадує всім, що він має ядерну зброю.
So I think that he is holding this nuclear option as kind of like his final trump card. He's sort of like taunting the world or threatening the West and other parts of the world that he and reminding everybody that he has these nuclear weapons.
Десь місяць тому була зустріч Путіна з керівниками Китайської Республіки.
So about a month ago, Putin had a meeting with leaders from China.
І, звичайно, там були перекладачі, які перекладали з російської на китайську і назад.
And of course, there were translators present who were translating from Russian to Chinese and back the other way.
Але там був цікавий момент, коли вони обговорювали про ядерну зброю, Китай сказав досить акуратно, але чітко, що вони проти застосування ядерної зброї.
And there was an interesting point there when the conversation turned to the issue of nuclear weapons, China said very clearly and unequivocally that they are against the use of nuclear weapons.
І Путін відповів коротку фразу: "Ми вас почули".
And Putin answered with a very short phrase. He said, "We have heard you."
І я не знаю, як в Америці, але в нас, в Україні, в Росії, ця фраза дуже багато говорить для тих, хто чує цю фразу.
And I don't know about people in the West or in the United States, but for folks in Ukraine, this phrase actually has quite a bit of meaning.
Вона говорить про те, що Путін визнає, що тон в розмові про це задає Китай, а не Росія.
Ще раз, я не зрозумів.
Китай веде цю лінію, тобто Росія не може нав'язати Китаю свою гру, Китай нав'язує Росії свою гру.
Ага, so the impression that people take away from this is that it's not Russia calling the shots in all of this, or at least in the nuclear question, but China, and that Russia is going to go along with what China is asking.
Тобто вся ця війна взагалі привела Росію до ситуації, коли навіть в своєму клубі тоталітарних держав де є інші держави, де є Росія, де є Китай, вона не є лідером, вона мусить рахуватися з старшим братом Китаєм.
So it's interesting that because of this war that Russia started, this has brought them to the point where even in their own like club of tyrants, if you will, they are no longer the senior partner. They're having to, they can't just make unilateral decisions, especially on the nuclear issue. They are having to take into consideration the desires, in this case, of China, which has really come out as more the senior partner in their group under current circumstances.
І тепер, по суті, Китай говорить, звичайно, ви можете воювати з українцями, скільки хочете, але ми проти того, щоб ви використовували ядерну зброю.
So China, as it were, is saying, well, you guys can go and fight with the Ukrainians all you want, but we are categorically against the idea of the use of nuclear weapons.
Це означає, що Росія все ще може застосувати зброю, але тоді вона свариться своїм надійним союзником Китаєм.
So, of course, this means that Russia could still use nuclear weapons, but if they did so, it would bring them into conflict with one of their most, one of their best allies.
І все це показує, що це помаленьку-помаленьку заганяє Росію в такий кут, звідки вона не може вибратися.
So all of this shows, of course, that Russia is kind of getting pushed further back into this corner whence they will not easily be able to get out.
І Росія завжди намагалася показати, що з одного боку є вони, Росія, з іншого боку є Америка.
So Russia has often tried to cast the picture as, you know, them being on one side of the conflict, and then on the other side we have the adversary, which is America.
Але життя показує, що навіть Китай, Індія і деякі інші країни, які точно не проамериканські, вони не так дуже проросійські. Тобто вони намагаються відсторонитися від цих проблем, від цих війн і так далі.
But reality has shown that even countries like China and India, which are very much not pro-American, they are not necessarily pro-Russian. So in other words, I think what he's saying is it's not so simple as to say there's only two sides. You're either with Russia or with America. Many countries of note that are not pro-American are nonetheless not fully in support of what Russia is doing.
Тому я би відповів так, що не можна повністю виключати, що Росія застосує ядерну зброю, але ймовірність невисока.
So, of course, so I would summarize like this, that we of course cannot, we cannot completely rule out that Russia would use nuclear weapons, but I feel that the likelihood is of them doing that is actually very low. Okay, let's move on to our next question now. One of the big pieces of news in recent time is that the city of Kherson, or Kherson, as you'll often hear it in the American news, was recently liberated by Ukrainian forces. So, Serhii, how significant is this victory for Ukraine, and what are the next steps?
Для українців це важлива перемога, тому що Херсон перебував під окупацією приблизно 9 місяців.
So for Ukraine, this is a great victory because Kherson was under Russian occupation for something like 9 months.
І Росія говорила по телебаченню, і в самому Херсоні висіли великі бігборди, що Херсон назавжди з Росією.
And Russia was fond of saying on their television networks, and there were also great big what they call billboards in Kherson that said like Kherson is with Russia forever.
Росія змінила конституцію і включила в свої землі Південну Україну, тобто відповідно до сьогоднішньої конституції, Херсон це російське місто.
So Russia even went as far as to change their own constitution to add southern regions of Ukraine like the Kherson Oblast to Russia. So based on Russia's current laws, southern Ukraine is part of Russia.
Так, і тому для нас ця перемога, це з одного боку це місто, де живуть українці, з іншого боку це вихід на Крим.
So for us, this is a great victory, first of all, because there are Ukrainians living there and they're now liberated, but also because this is like a stepping stone to Crimea.
Але символічне значення найбільше. Херсон був єдиним обласним центром, який змогли окупувати росіяни. І зараз ми цей єдиний обласний центр забрали від них назад.
But I think the symbolic value here is perhaps the greatest because Kherson was the only oblast center of a Ukrainian in Ukraine that Russia was able to capture in over the entirety of the war, and now Ukraine has taken that back.
Тепер звичайний росіянин може поставити собі питання, навіщо ми почали цю війну, якщо ми не захопили ні Одесу, ні Харків, ні Київ, на короткий час захопили Херсон і навіть Херсон втратили.
So like a typical Russian might begin asking himself like, well, why have we even started this war? We weren't able to capture Odessa or Kyiv or Kharkiv or any of these other cities. We did get Kherson and now we've lost it again. So, Serhii, one of the things that has been encouraging to me as I've stayed in touch with you over these last few months is to hear about your ministry and your evangelism efforts to your fellow Ukrainian soldiers. Quickly for our audience, I'll just add that Serhii has a Telegram group for close friends and associates where he shares different highlights from his time there in the military. And he often talks about different conversations that he's able to have with his comrades about the Lord, sometimes even with officers and superiors. So, Serhii, tell us a little bit about your ministry there with the Ukrainian soldiers.
Ну, в підрозділі, де я служу, є приблизно 50 військовослужбовців.
So in the group where I serve, there's about 50 other soldiers.
І я мав розмови про Бога принаймні з 15-ма.
And I've had conversations about the Lord with about 15 of them.
Я також розмовляв з деякими офіцерами.
And I've also spoken with some of my officers.
Деколи я ініціюю розмови, деколи вони щось запитують, що їх цікаво,
Sometimes, що їх цікавить. Sometimes I initiate the conversation, sometimes they ask me various interesting questions.
Проблема в тому, що деколи вони запитують, але не готові слухати більше ніж одне чи два речення.
So the interesting thing is that sometimes they ask, but they really don't want to hear any more than one or two sentences by way of an answer.
І тут багато хлопців, з якими я служу, вони з Східної України або з Південної.
So a lot of the young guys that I serve with, they're either from the east of Ukraine or from the south of Ukraine.
І формально вони православні, але переважно вони байдужі до Бога і не відвідують храм.
So formally they belong to the Orthodox Church, but in reality many of them are mostly apathetic to issues of faith.
І це досить відрізняється від Західної України, де більшість людей більш-менш регулярно відвідує храм.
And this is kind of a stark difference between when compared with people in the west of Ukraine who actually quite often will attend services at the local church, you know, the Catholic Church or the Orthodox.
В Західній Україні час від часу можна брати в руки Біблію і говорити: "Давайте я покажу вам, що про це говорить Біблія". І це деколи працює. Тут це майже завжди не працює.
So in Western Ukraine, it's common for someone to, like, I might take the Bible and say, well, let me show you, you know, what the Bible says about this or that question. And that often has an effect, but here it doesn't seem to work as well. I guess they maybe don't pay attention to that as much.
Так. А тим не менше, я намагаюся розмовляти про Бога, і деколи ці розмови мають якусь користь, якийсь сенс.
But nonetheless, I continue to try to speak with them about the Lord, and sometimes these conversations actually bear fruit. So, as we know, recently, Russia has really been targeting Ukraine's critical infrastructure with large missile strikes. And we know this causes a lot of difficulty for people trying to keep their homes warm. Even right now, as we said at the beginning of the episode, you're sitting there in the dark because there's no power. So tell us what this is going to mean, in your opinion, for Ukrainians as they face the winter months.
Росія воює різними засобами, і якщо вона не може перемогти нас на землі, вона хоче перемогти нашу електрику.
So, Russia fights with various different tactics, and if they can't gain victory on the battlefield, then they attack our infrastructure, in this case our electricity.
Влітку ми мали достатньо електрики для себе, і ми мали трохи електрики на продаж в Європу.
So in the summer months, we had plenty of electricity for ourselves, and we even had some extra that we were able to export to Europeans.
Зараз проблеми з електрикою є досить серйозні, і, можливо, багатьом українцям треба буде зимувати без електрики, без тепла, без комфорту, можливо, навіть всю зиму.
So right now, the problems with electricity are very serious, and it's quite possible that many Ukrainians will have to face the winter without access to electricity or heat in their homes.
можливо, ціль російської армії – це деморалізувати українців, зробити їх слабкими, поступливими.
Perhaps the goal of the Russian military is to weaken or to demoralize Ukrainians and make them easier to conquer.
Але я не бачу українців, які деморалізовані і йдуть на якісь компроміси. Всі вони говорять, що ми повинні воювати,
but
ми
I
можемо
don't...
жити без електрики.
But I don't
але в Україні.
But I don't see any Ukrainians who are demoralized and ready to give up. They on the contrary continue to fight. They say, "Hey, we can live without electricity. We're going to fight."
Зеленський сказав, ми живемо без електрики і без тепла, але ми живемо без росіян.
Зеленський now famously said, "We live without electricity." Ще раз, без чого і без чого? Без електрики?
Без світла і без тепла.
So Zelensky said, he has this rather well-known quote, that we now have to live without electricity and without warmth or without heat, but we live without the Russians.
Так, і насправді це так само думає майже кожен українець. Тобто це не то, що Зеленський сказав, і би всі там, добре, yes, sir.
But
ми так само думаємо.
The interesting thing is that that's exactly how most individual Ukrainians think. This is not just some political statement by Zelensky. That is representative of the attitude of most Ukrainians out there.
Звичайно, це некомфортно для жінок, для дітей, які ходять в садочок, чи вчаться в школі. Дуже багато людей поїхало в Європу.
Of course.
Багато людей не повернуться зараз. Це дискомфорт, звичайно.
Of course, this is a great inconvenience or a discomfort for the women, for the children, for kids trying to go to school. It's a consideration for people who might otherwise be ready to return to Ukraine from somewhere in exile in Europe. It's an inconvenience, to be sure.
Але якщо є такі українці, які кажуть, давайте зупинимо цю війну, давайте віддамо їм Донбас, чи Крим, чи Херсон, чи що, щоб у нас була електрика, напевно, це дуже маленький відсоток.
But if there are, in fact, any Ukrainians who would be ready to say, let's just stop fighting, let's give them, you know, let's give them Crimea, let's give them the Donbass, whatever they want, just so we can have electricity, that's maybe a few isolated individuals.
І ще один важливий момент, що дуже багато українців за ці 10 місяців війни зрозуміли, що Росія не зупиниться.
And another thing that I think is important is to realize that no matter what happens, Russia is not going to stop.
Тобто справа це зрозуміли навіть люди на сході і на півдні. Раніше вони були більш проросійські. Зараз навіть люди на сході і на півдні, вони вважають Росію агресором і ворогом.
So this is something that even the people now in the east and the south understand. Traditionally those populations have been more pro-Russian. They've leaned more towards Russia, but even they have now understood that Russia is not going to stop. We can't buy them off by offering them some territory or whatever and then hoping they'll be happy with that. Okay, so as we wrap this up, how can we pray for you and for Ukraine? That's one question. And then also, how can we best be involved in helping Ukrainians if there are people who want to, I don't know, donate money or even maybe come here and help in some way? What do you think is the best way for Americans or for people in the West to be involved?
Я думаю, є багато способів допомагати Україні.
I think there's a lot of ways that you can help Ukraine.
По-перше, треба молитися, щоб Україна мала і відвагу боротися, і засоби для боротьби.
First of all, it's important to pray that Ukraine would have both the courage to continue the fight and the necessary tools and weapons and supplies to continue the fight.
І нам потрібна міжнародна підтримка і дипломатична, і енергетична, і матеріальна, і зброя.
We need international support, and that needs to be diplomatic and economic, weapons and energy assistance.
Звичайно, що якщо хтось має велике бажання приїхати в Україну боротися в українській армії, то це теж добре.
So of course if someone has a great desire to come and help to fight here in Ukraine, that's fantastic.
Але також можна просто бути волонтером, привозити сюди автомобілі чи аптечки, чи ліки, чи навіть їжу, чи навіть їжу для дітей, чи памперси. Це все потрібно.
But you can also serve as a volunteer and help to bring in food and supplies, food for kids, generators, what else, medical kits, all kinds of supplies that people bring in. Those are all very needed. And I'll just add one thing. Я ще одну думку додам про гуманітарну допомогу. I want to just add one thing that I've recently come to realize, and that is that a lot of supplies that are given to the Ukrainian army, they wear out much more quickly than you might expect. So we recently helped to bring in a load of tactical shoes for a group of soldiers. But the soldiers go and run through muddy trenches in them. They get them soaked and dirty. Then they have to clean them and wash them and let them dry by a fire. Then they go out and do it again. And so supplies that are given to them will be worn out and destroyed much more quickly than if you were donating those same supplies to someone in civilian life. And so if you think that there must be just enough of all that by now, there continues to be a deficit. And all of these areas, clothing, food, tactical gear, sleeping bags, winter gear, medical supplies, all of that continues to be in great need. All right. Well, there is something exciting coming up, Serhii, for you here at the end of December involving your family. So would you like to tell us what you're expecting to happen?
Так, в кінці цього місяця, якщо все буде гаразд, моя дружина і двоє дітей, вони на кілька днів приїдуть до мене.
So yes, at the end of this month, if everything goes well, my wife and my kids will be coming to visit me.
Ми, якщо все буде добре, ми проведемо разом 5 або 6 днів.
If everything goes well, we'll be able to spend about 5 or 6 days together.
З нетерпінням чекаю на цей час.
So I'm really looking forward to this time. All right. Well, this has been a great chat. I've really enjoyed it. So as we wrap this up, Serhii, is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Я хочу ще кілька думок сказати про війну між Україною і Росією.
So I'd like to share just a couple of other thoughts about the war between Ukraine and Russia.
Рік тому російська армія вважалася другою найсильнішою.
A year ago, the Russian army was considered like the second most powerful in the world.
Можливо, вона і була другою найсильнішою.
Perhaps this was even true.
І коли вони почали атаку на Україну, коли вони почали кидати бомби, ракети, коли сюди приїхали танки.
But when they began the attack against Ukraine, when they started firing bombs and missiles and they rolled into Ukraine with their tanks.
Вони відчули великий опір українців, які відважно боронили свою землю.
They felt the great resistance of the Ukrainians who fought to defend their land.
Так, ми мали значно менше зброї, ніж вони мали.
We had far fewer weapons than they have.
І кількісно наша армія була десь у 4 або 5 разів менша.
And the amount of soldiers we had in our army was maybe 4 or 5 times fewer than the soldiers they had.
Ми мали значно менше літаків, менше танків, і по більшості видів зброї в нас було у кілька разів менше зброї.
We had far fewer fighter jets and planes, we had fewer tanks, and in general, if you take any category of weaponry, we had many times less in all those categories.
Але завдяки відвазі, завдяки тому, що ми на своїй землі, і завдяки тому, що західні країни почали нам допомагати, ми змогли зупинити наступ Росії.
But because of the courage of Ukrainians, because of the assistance of Western partners, we've been able to overcome this deficit and to defend our land.
Якщо в Америці чи в Європі є люди, які думають, чому взагалі ми, американці, чи німці, чи французи, повинні допомагати Україні? Це ж не наша війна.
And if there are people maybe in America or in Germany or other places in Europe who may think, well, why should we be involved? This isn't our war. Why should we come and defend Ukraine?
Тоді я спитаю вас, якщо ви йдете по вулиці і бачите, що великий здоровий чоловік, який важить 100 кілограмів, хоче набити маленького хлопчика, якому 16 років.
So then I would ask you, imagine that you're walking down the street and you see a large, heavy, healthy man who weighs, 100 kilos, and he begins to attack a young, say, a 16-year-old boy who's far smaller and less experienced than he is. Would you also just pass by and say, well, it's not my business?
Тобто я думаю, що якщо ми чесні з собою, і в обох випадках ми повинні сказати, ми за правду, ми за справедливість, ми за добро, ми за демократію, тому нам потрібно допомагати світлому боку, так би мовити, білому боку.
So I think really if we're honest with ourselves, then we would have to admit that in both cases, both the case of the war in Ukraine and the theoretical attack on the street, we are obligated to become involved, to stand on the side of the right, to fight against evil.
В 14-му році, коли Путін відібрав Крим назад до Росії,
in 2014 when Putin took Crimea to be part of Russia.
Він подавав це як справедливість.
He presented this as in some way like an act of justice.
Він говорив, що Крим завжди був і має бути російським.
He said that Crimea had always been and must be part of Russia.
Насправді Крим був законно переданий Україні законним рішенням Радянського Союзу.
But the truth is that Crimea was given to Ukraine by law, and this happened under the laws of the Soviet Union.
Тобто це не було так, як подавав це Путін. Путін подавав це як просто подарунок Хрущова Україні.
So Putin kind of presented this as sort of like an informal gift of Khrushchev to Ukraine.
Потім, коли Путін почав війну на Донбасі, він говорив, що на Донбасі живе якийсь особливий донбаський народ, і Росія допомагає донбасівцям захистити свою землю від поганих українців.
So and then when he annexed or took you know, he started the proxy war in Donbass, he tried to assert that there was some kind of like a specific or a separate Donbass nation of people that were living there, and Russia had stepped in to protect these Donbassites from the evil Ukrainians who were oppressing them.
І останні події з Південною Україною, коли вони легалізували захоплення Херсону, в одному з офіційних документів вони написали «Херсонська нація».
And it's interesting that in these recent referendums, when they annexed Kherson, they wrote actually in some of the documents that they referred to the people of Kherson as like the Kherson nation.
Тобто навіть росіяни раніше ніколи не говорили, що в Херсоні живе якась окрема херсонська нація.
Even the Russians in previous times never talked about the people of Kherson as though they were some kind of like ethnic, separate ethnic group.
Тобто до чого я веду?
Якщо
людина,
what's the point here?
Десь в Америці чи в Європі не може зрозуміти, де правда, достатньо трошки заглибитися, небагато, трошки, і ти вже починаєш бачити, як багато брехні є з боку Росії.
So if you, again, if you're wondering where is the justification or where is the truth, you don't have to step in very deep. You don't have to dig too deeply into the Russian propaganda and what they're saying to find the obvious lies.
Тому я вважаю, що будь-яка порядна, щира, чесна людина повинна захищати добро, захищати правду, захищати справедливість.
So I think that any normal, honest, upright person has to do what they can to defend justice, to defend the right, to defend goodness.
Так, тому якщо ви порядна, щира, добра людина, допомагайте Україні.
So if you are a good, upright, sincere person, then help Ukraine. All right, well, this has been a wonderful conversation. Sedhi, thank you so much for your time and for your insight. That's going to wrap up our episode for today. I just want to add that we'll be leaving on December 23rd to travel to Krakow, Poland. This is me and a couple of my kids. We're going to be meeting Sedhi's wife and children there in Krakow. And then the following morning on the 24th, we will drive them into Ukraine to Lviv. And from there, they'll get a train and they'll go down to Odessa to visit their daddy. And I am really excited about this. This is probably one of the hardest things for me to see in this whole conflict is how many families have been separated. I know how important it is for me to be with my wife and my children. And it's difficult to watch what Serhii and Natalia and their family have had to go through and so many other thousands and thousands of families. And it's fantastic, I think it's fantastic that they're going to get to spend this time together to be reunited. So please pray that we'll have a safe journey across the border, that we won't have any problems. And as Sidhi said, and I want to echo this too, please keep praying for Ukraine. This is not so much a war between governments. This is a question of good and evil. This is a question of darkness and light. So pray for peace and for liberty, for victory over the oppressor. And that's all for now. Thank you so much for listening and have a stupendous day. May God bless Ukraine.
Нехай Бог благословить Україну.